The Outspoken Cyclist podcast is supported by the Dodd Camera Company. An Ohio institution in photography for over 100 years, Dodd Camera has stayed right in step with the newest in digital cameras and accessories, as well as offering services such as photo restoration and large format printing. Dodd Camera stores are located in Cleveland, Dayton, Cincinnati, Chicago, and now Columbus in the Oak Creek Shopping Center on Cameron Avenue. If you don't have one in your town, you can find them online at doddcamera.com. At Dodd Camera, the focus is on you. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Leeds.
Hello, welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks. Tim McKenna is off this week. So what a week it's been in Cleveland. The Cavaliers raised their championship banner and passed out bodacious rings. If you've seen any of these players, LeBron James, these rings like take up their entire hand. They are amazing. First two games of the World Series are in the books. They were played here in Cleveland at Progressive Field. Cleveland won the first one. Chicago won the second one. So we'll see where it goes from there. They're in at Wrigley Field this week. By the time you hear this, there will have been two more games in the book. So let's hope their Cleveland wins. Go Tribe. We have three guests this week and some news. So I'd like to get right to it. First, we're going to speak with the director of our local advocacy organization, Jacob Van Sickle. Bike Cleveland has come a long way under his guidance over the past couple of years, and I was drawn to a story that involved a topic that's been a, sort of a political football for the entire election season, and that's immigration. It turns out that the Northeast Ohio area has a robust group working on helping newly emigrated folks, and transportation can be a huge obstacle in making their transition to a productive and economically feasible life here in the States. Bike Cleveland is involved in helping, and I wanted to know how. So Jacob's going to be with me in a moment. After that, we're going to head on over to Inverness, Scotland. We tried to do this interview last week, but we had a horrible connection via telephone. So we persevered and decided to use Skype. And the interview is fine. We did do it a little bit earlier just to make sure it was okay. Ewan Wilson is from a company called High Adventures. He's going to tell us about the company and a new tour that just sucked me right in when I saw the video about it. The new tour is called Into the Labyrinth, and it takes you on a converted minesweeper through the fjords of Norway for a rugged and spectacular advanced mountain bike adventure. So if you're one of those people who isn't afraid of hoisting your bike up on your back and hoofing it up a mountain and then riding down some rugged single track, this might be the adventure for you. The scenery is breathtaking. It certainly is not for the faint of heart. We're also going to do some news, and then we're going to head on over to the East Coast to catch up with Cycling Savvy's Mike Wilson. We haven't talked to him in a long time. We haven't talked about Cycling Savvy in a long time. It's a course on how to be more confident on the road. When we first spoke with its originator, Kerry Caffrey, a few years ago, it was just getting underway. Well, it's grown a lot since then. And Mike, along with John Schubert, are giving a talk about Cycling Savvy at the Philly Bike Expo this weekend. So if you're hearing this show on Sunday, the Philly Bike Expo is still going on. And the talk is at 3 p.m. down at the Philly Bike Convention Center. So I want to make sure that we get that on this week. And certainly the information will be timely even after the seminar. So it's a big show. We got lots to get done. So let's go and talk with Jacob Van Sickle from Bike Cleveland. Hi, Jacob. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist.
Thanks for having me.
Well, there's a lot to talk about with Bike Cleveland right now, and I was particularly interested in a program the organization is involved in helping refugees? Because immigration seems to be at the top of a lot of people's lists right now. What can you tell us about the program and how Bike Cleveland is involved?
Yeah, so the program is called the Cleveland Refugee Bike Project. It's currently a campaign we have on IOB that we're fundraising for to get refugees bikes as well as training. One of the things we've learned in working with some of the refugee settlement agencies is that transportation is really an obstacle for a lot of refugees coming into the United States, either navigating public transit or, not having access to a car. So we're going to actually equip refugees. We're aiming to get 50 or 100 in this first pilot, bicycles and education on how to ride them safely and equip them with bikes so they can get to work, to school, or other social opportunities to really help integrate them more fully into the culture here.
So where are most of these refugees coming from? Are they coming from places like Syria?
Yeah, I know there's some Syrian ones. There's a good number of Bhutanese refugees. Really anywhere that, we're working with the Cleveland Catholic Charities Migration and Refugee Services. So, the program will be open to anybody that they get that they're, responsible for resettling, that would really need access to, a reliable form of transportation, being a bike.
So you said this is a pilot program. Have any bikes already been given to anyone?
No, we haven't yet. Currently, we're doing some fundraising for it, and the goal will be to launch it in, early to mid 2017. There's four resettlement agencies in Cleveland, and right now we're trying it out, like I mentioned, with Cleveland Catholic Charities, and our goal, when it's successful, will be to expand it to the other agencies as well.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good idea. Now that a lot of things have changed in Cleveland with infrastructure, it's probably going to be a little bit easier getting people on the road on bikes. So do you have a goal as to how many bikes you're trying to get in this first round of fundraising?
Yeah, our high goal is to get 100. It obviously depends on how successful our IOB campaign is. But the goal, is anywhere from 50 to 100. And, we'll equip the bikes with bike lights. Every refugee will get a helmet, a lock. And then we're working with, like I mentioned, Cleveland Catholic Charities and as well as Ohio City Bicycle Co-op to do the training. So Catholic Charities are going to provide translators to help translate a lot of the co-op's wonderful educational information into the relevant languages for the refugees and partner with the bicycle co-op to actually provide the training so that the refugees that are riding the bicycles do it safely and legally.
So we are talking mainly about adults, not children.
Yes, primarily adults is what we're aiming for. As kind of a lifeline for them to get to work or get to school.
Sure. Well, I've never heard of IOB. Tell me about that. That's a fundraising platform I'm not aware of right now.
Yeah, it's a fundraising platform called In Our Backyard. It's actually the reason we're actually going with IOB is there's a match component with it. So if we have the most number of donors and raise the most money, kind of showing that there's community support for this initiative, it'll actually be matched by the Cleveland Climate Action Fund, up to $5,000. So we're really aiming to get to that goal so we can kind of leverage everybody's dollars and really serve, kind of our high range of people and get the most bikes into people's hands.
Wow, that's really a good goal. Well, we will remind people at the end of our conversation about IOB, but I also saw something else that interested me when I was sort of doing my background for this particular conversation, and it's about a letter you wrote to CBS about a month ago. Tell us what the incident was that prompted this letter.
Yeah, so there was some radio DJs on 92.3 The Fan that had said some fairly incorrect and disparaging remarks around bicyclists and riding in the roadway and kind of encouraging people to be violent or to honk at them. I think anybody that commutes to work or rides even recreationally in the road, understands that it's already can be a fairly hostile environment out there. We're really concerned about, what this individual was saying, what that might mean for people, out riding at that time, but also kind of reinforcing some of the ideas that people have around people riding their bikes in the road, which is, you know, a legal activity. You're legally allowed to ride in the road.
So did you get a reaction from the people at CBS?
Yeah, yes, we did. Yeah, they actually, you know, as a result of that letter and a really good number of our members actually contacted the radio station and CBS Radio. We had conversations with them and actually a number of their sponsors, Mike Lally from Lally Chevrolet and Window Nation. They offered us a pretty generous media time to air our public awareness campaign that we have. It's called We're All Drivers. You can go to bikecleveland.org/alldrivers to read about it. So they played our PSA for a good number of weeks on the radio station. We also were on one of their internet shows called Cleveland Connections, talking about a lot of the work that Bike Cleveland's doing, as well as kind of the rights and responsibilities of motorists and cyclists when operating in the roadway. So after that, I think they understood kind of the error of their ways, you know, kind of inciting violence, to a specific number or a specific set of people that are road users, and came back with a pretty generous offer to help us kind of write those and kind of inform the public of, you know, what it really does mean to be a cyclist on the road, and that, you know, it's a legal activity and you really just need to, you know, get along on the road out there and give cyclists space.
Well, it's interesting because it's like what goes around comes around. I can remember many years ago, our friend Lois Moss, who at that time was with Century Cycles, just being shamed to tears for calling into one of these shock jock shows where they were doing the same thing, you know, get them out of the way, run them down, whatever. And they too were able to get a media campaign back. It's funny that we have to go through this over and over again, and still the public doesn't seem to understand that cyclists are on the road for a good reason and legally. So it's just amazing to me that this keeps coming up over and over again. So lastly, I want to know if Bike Cleveland has any new programs that you're rolling out for 2017.
Yeah, so we had a really good year this year. We worked with the Cuyahoga County Department of Sustainability to launch a new kind of large-scale bike share system called UH Bikes. This year it rolled out, it's actually continuing to roll out. They're having 250 bikes out in downtown University Circle and some of the surrounding neighborhoods. You know, 2017, our goal with that program is going to be to really make sure it's accessible to people of all income levels. So we're going to be working with the Cleveland Public Library and Firefighter Community Credit Union, develop some programs, you know, to make sure the system's affordable and people can get access to it. In addition, the city's wrapping up a pretty comprehensive plan for a network of protected bike lanes. It's called the Midway Plan, a kind of a grassroots effort that we've built up and got the city to do a more formal study on. So that's going to wrap up at the end of this year, and we're going to be working with them to try to install, a demonstration project around protected bike lanes, which will be pretty huge for Cleveland. I mean, we've been great in terms of getting bike lanes down, which is a great traffic calming tool, and also makes the street safer for, you know, pedestrians and motorists by, you know, forcing traffic to drive the speed limit. But we know that if we really want to get more people out riding, we really need to create some sort of physical separation between cyclists and motor vehicles. I use my wife as an example. I was like, you know, she'll come out and ride in group rides where there's a lot of people, but she's not going to go ride on a bike lane on West 14th Street. Unless there's some sort of physical separation. So we're working with the city on a demonstration project for protected bike lanes in 2017.
Well, you know, I have to say, Jacob, you took over this organization, what, 3 years ago?
2012.
Okay, so 4 years ago.
Yep.
You have done some pretty amazing things in a short period of time. Cleveland's really coming along with its bike programs, and I have to say I'm pretty proud of it.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, there's still a lot of work to do. We're still behind the ball, and compared to a number of cities. But we certainly have, you know, the support of the cycling community, and, you know, we're gaining the support from city leaders and local politicians that really understand that, you know, by making our city, you know, bike friendly, it's not just good for people on bikes, but, it's good for the economy. It's good for pedestrians. It's really making a city where people have, you know, options on how they want to get around. And really, that's why people live in cities, is they have options.
I just have to say, I think you've just done a great job, and it's really, really nice to see after all these years, and I've been here a long time, that Cleveland is stepping right up. One last thing, which didn't occur to me. How did things go during the Republican National Convention? I know there were like 300 peace officers on bikes, police officers on mm-hmm. bikes. Were you involved in that at all?
So we were involved a little bit. So we were reached out by the company that was contracted to provide the police bikes. And we worked with the Ohio City Bicycle Co-op to kind of corral a number of the mechanics from local bike shops around the community to help actually assemble the bikes and make sure they were in good working order. I think the most exciting part for us is, you know, after the RNC, there's, you know, still police using the bikes. They're kind of putting together the bike units in a number of the police districts and kind of working with those police officers. You know, it's a good form of community policing, but it also is great to, you know, have, you know, that perspective, a police officer out on a bike experiencing what people that are commuting to work or to school every day experience. So I think that's probably the more exciting part, kind of that lasting effect of it all.
Well, I really am excited about what's going on here in Northeast Ohio. I've always been proud to call Cleveland my home, and it's just getting better for cycling. It's great. Well, thanks so much for talking with me. Give us the website for the refugee fundraising program, though.
Yeah, it's just iobi.com, which is iobi.com. And then in the search function on there, just search for Cleveland Refugee Bike Project, and it'll pop up for you.
Okay. Well, thanks for talking with me today. It's a pleasure to talk with you again, and we'll talk again.
Awesome. Great. Thanks, Diane.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Van Sickle is the director of Bike Cleveland. Lots of great things going on. I'm particularly interested in seeing how the IOBI campaign goes. If there's matching funds, it would be nice if we met whatever that goal was. We're going to head on over to Inverness, Scotland, and talk with Ewan Wilson from High Adventures about a new trip into the fjords of Norway. Hi, Ewan. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show this week.
Hi, Diane. Thanks for having us. I'm delighted to be talking all things mountain biking.
Yeah, that's right. You guys just do mountain bikes. You're the director of High Adventures. Tell us about your work and your company.
Yes, so we are based in the Highlands of Scotland, and we run mountain biking adventures in 12 countries around the world. So they are all guided experiences ranging from 7 days to 2 weeks, from New Zealand to Norway to Nepal to Namibia, all the ends.
I know, and some of them sound fabulous. In fact, the way that I found you was a press release about a new ride you're doing, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But I wanted to ask you some things about your ratings of novice and intermediate and advanced and how that works. I mean, I can figure out novice. That would be me. But what would it take to be an advanced mountain biker? What kinds of things does that rider need to be able to do to go on one of your advanced adventures?
Yeah, sure. To give you a bit of background and what we do and how we try and line people up on the right adventures to make sure they're with the right group and the right group of riders. Basically, we try and ride what's called single track in the industry, you know, the sort of narrow 1 foot to sort of 1 meter wide trails. That's our goal, is to find the best of these single tracks around the world. So as I'm sure you were saying, that you're a novice. Now, no doubt you road bike or you hike or something like that. So when you do that, you've got maybe one dimension. You need to know how fit you need to be. But with mountain biking, you also have a second dimension of the skill level. And that's really where these intermediates to advanced come from. So a beginner would be looking at sort of canal paths to forest tracks to smooth trail, maybe a meter wide, where you don't need to have any particular technique. Just fitness helps you. But as you start going into intermediates and onto advanced, you're really thinking about lifting lifting the front wheel of the bike, lifting the back wheel, controlling the brakes and steep, loose terrain, over rocks, over tree roots. You know, really starting to get into not quite Red Bull Rampage, but, you know, we're heading that way.
Red Bull Rampage. I got it. You know, I watched some of the videos on your site. And some of the adventures are just breathtaking. And the one that I really want to talk about today is brand new for you. It's called Into the Labyrinth, which is about the Norwegian fjords. It is not for the faint of heart. That is for sure. Tell us how you came up with this particular concept, because it's very unusual.
Yeah, so we've been looking into the Scandinavia region for maybe 3 to 4 years and trying to find this really, really unique, one-off, different adventure. And we started to look at, you know, how do the Norwegians move around their country, you know, and historically, and used the waterways, used boats. So we decided, well, what, instead of fighting the landscape, let's try and work with it. So we found a small ex-Scandinavian minesweeper boat, ex-Navy boat. It's also been a rescue boat in its time as well. And it's been converted to an adventure boat for 8 customers, plus guides, plus the staff who man the boat itself. And we worked with the skipper to find trails that are more difficult and to access unless you use the boat. And we got out there and we spent a couple of weeks investigating the nooks and the crannies of the fjords to find these really interesting and trails. But as you can imagine, the fjords are steep-sided, they're high, so it's technical. This is one of our most advanced trips. There's a lot of steep climbing, steep descending, but also hike-a-bike, or as the Norwegians call it, push-bike. So you're spending sometimes plodding on your feet with your bike by your side or on your back to reach 1,000 meter peaks. But then the fun starts where we descend back down to the fjord valley at the base where your boat is awaiting for you to move you to the next location.
Well, it's just watching it is so beautiful, and it looks so quiet and so serene, and yet it looks so rugged and mean at the same time. So how long is this tour? This is a 1 week tour?
That's right. That's right. So 7 nights on board. And basically the way we've done it, and Norway is an expensive country. You know, there is just no getting away with that. So what we've done with this is, when you land in country, we pick you up at the airport, we take you to the boat, we spend 7 nights on the boat, fully catered, 3 meals a day, all the snacks, all the glasses of wine and celebratory beers at the end of a day, plus transports, guiding, everything's included. So basically, leave your wallet at the airport when you land and we'll look after you. That's what we found was the best way that we could access Norway in a controlled fashion, if you like, on the cost front.
One of the other things I wanted to talk about on this particular trip is whether or not people use their own bikes, because it seemed that when I watched the video, all the bikes looked like they were the same kind of bikes. They were different colors, but they were different. They were all the same bikes.
Exactly. So what we've decided with this trip, because it's advanced plus and the trails in their nature are technical, what we've decided is that we will not rent or hire bikes out on this trip. We've sort of put it, if you like, as a leveler for the type of customer who come on this, and they will want to bring their own bikes so that they are comfortable, happy immediately as soon as they are there, unpack their bikes, get on their bike, they're comfortable and ready for action, rather than spending a couple of days dialing into what is an alien bike to them. And as you mentioned, you know, we were on this trip exploring, and they were our, if you like, our partners' bikes that we were using. So yes, they are all of the same style.
Oh, okay, I get it. But you can bring your own bike on this trip. That's pretty cool, because I do know that, you know what, we travel by tandem, and it's like, I don't want to try and dial in somebody else's tandem geometry. That would be hard. Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Ewan Wilson. He's over in Scotland and telling us about his company, High Adventures, and this new trip into the labyrinth. So this is a brand new trip. Have you actually had people booking it already?
That's right. So we launched this, just 1 week ago. We've had a handful of bookings. We've got a group looking to come who have done ski touring in Norway before. So something quite similar in its ethos to what we've done. Dropped off by the boat, skinning up to the top of the mountain and returning back down to the fjord on skis. So they've done that and they see that, you know, the summer version of that is what we've created, and they're keen to come back. So it's starting to gather pace. It's new. It's an innovative, slightly different way of using a mountain bike. So people are just getting the feel for it, enjoying the video, enjoying our images, and making inquiries.
Well, you just mentioned the video, and if you go to the site, which is not High Adventures, by the way, we're going to give people the website before we sign off, but all of your trips offer a video, and I specifically watched the Spanish trip, the one to Spain, because it was not advanced or intermediate. It was novice. And it's stunning. Do you really sleep in a cave on that trip?
Yes, we do. So it's a portion of Spain. It's actually called the Badlands. And I suppose our way to think of it is like a small sort of Grand Canyon area, if you like. And what the locals have done over hundreds and hundreds of years is basically scrape the landscape away. So they would have a mound of earth and they would literally scrape it out to create their houses. Now, there are still some people living in caves, but most of these are now sort of a tourist attraction, if you like, hotels, sort of Airbnb-style accommodation, and wine cellars. So we stay at one, which is a beautiful wine cellar with lots of ham on hanging and lots of cheese and nice fire in the corner. And yeah, we stay in the caves. It's very unique and interesting.
It doesn't sound too primitive to me. I think the wine and the cheese by itself would make me happy.
Well, we are trying to elevate it.
From caveman to modern man, I see.
Luxury caveman.
Right. So I would like our listeners to find out more about your adventures. What is the website?
Yeah, so you can find us at mountainbikeworldwide.com. And we're also across the social media, your Facebooks, your Instagrams and your YouTubes, where you'll find, I think, around maybe 30 videos of our various locations around the world as well. And some skills videos, hints and tips as well.
Well, it's a wonderful site. You can sort of live these trips vicariously just by watching these videos. It's a lot of fun. But I really appreciate you telling us about the Into the Labyrinth and the Norwegian Fjords. I think if anybody is a, you know, committed and advanced mountain bike adventurer, this would be one hell of an adventure.
That's right. And we also cater for the beginner all the way through. So there's definitely a progression there if someone was newer into the mountain biking world. Maybe in a few years you could end up in Norway on the more advanced trips.
Well, that would be fun. Ewan, thank you so much for talking with me today. Good luck with all your trips. We'll keep watching, and maybe a trip will come up that I would feel comfortable doing. Thanks so much.
You're more than welcome. Anytime. We'd love to have you along.
Oh, thanks so much. All right. You have a great day.
You too. Thanks now. Cheers now.
And bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Ewan Wilson joined me from Inverness, Scotland, is where he is, with his High Adventure company. Into the Labyrinth is the Norwegian fjord adventure that they've just launched. We need to take a quick break. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
On Saturday, November 5th, the Cleveland Public Library and Ingenuity Cleveland present the Cleveland Mini Maker Fair, a family-friendly showcase of invention, creativity, resourcefulness, and a celebration of the maker movement, where people show what they're making and share what they are learning. The 2016 Cleveland Mini Maker Fair is free and open to the public, but seats are limited and registration is required. Registration and more information by calling 216-623-2921 or email to ops@cpl.org.
Hey, we're back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks. It's time for a few news items, and we have some interesting ones. You might remember last week we talked about the children of Robin Williams putting 87 of his bikes up for auction on Paddle 8. And so far, $600,000 has been raised for the Challenge Athletes Foundation and the Reeve Foundation. This came from my, as usual, favorite source, EnduranceSportsWire.com. The Williams family, the Challenge Athletes Foundation, and the Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation today announced the results of the Robin Williams Bicycle Collection Benefit Auction, which raised more than $600,000. All bicycles received multiple bids from all over the world and more than doubled the high estimate. The auction on Paddle 8 raised these critical funds for both organizations to further support the communities they served. As an avid cyclist, Williams was beloved by the cycling community and collected a number of high-end and custom bicycles, as well as commonplace mountain bikes and roadsters. The sale consisted of a selection of 87 bicycles from Williams' personal collection, highlighted by the Masterpieza La Carrera Futura 2000 bicycle, winning the highest bid at more than $40,000. Other notable bicycles included a Dario Pegoretti Responsorium and Love Number 3, Serrata Otro, Trek Madone 7 Diamonds, a Zip racing bike, and a Schwinn unicycle. The auction ran from October 13th to the 25th. It can be viewed at paddle8.com/Robin Williams, including a video on Williams' generosity and love of bicycles by his friend Conan O'Brien. So congratulations on just a fabulous auction. Even in his demise, Robin Williams is contributing back to society. So last week, while the George Hincapie Grand Fondo was going on, there was also an event in Carolinas called the Fall Cyclofest. It was presented by Interbike. They decided to report on it this week, and this came directly from Cyclofest as a press release. Fall Cyclofest closed this week after hosting retailers and consumers for 4 days of product demonstration, education, and live music. I think that's interesting that they actually include and live music at the U.S. National Whitewater Center in Charlotte, North Carolina. The event split into 2 private days for the bicycle industry trade and 2 days open to the public, attracted more than 500 retailers from both the Eastern Seaboard and beyond. Most of the retail attendants came from North Carolina and South Carolina, but many traveled from Tennessee, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Virginia, Maryland, and Michigan, to name a few. More than 3,000 consumers attended the public days from Florida, Texas, West Virginia, New York, Ohio, and more, though the majority were also from North and South Carolina. So I am assuming that they will run this event again next year. I would certainly hope so, because I thought it at least gives people who don't travel out to Las Vegas the chance to find their way to the East Coast and find a trade show that helps them. This comes from Bicycle Retailer and Industry News, and we have talked about this topic before. It's a very important topic to bicycle retailers, but it also has an impact on consumers, and that is about retail pricing. So there's been a lot of discussion, and we've had this discussion on the show, about people being able to order components for the bicycle industry, especially from some of the manufacturers like Shimano and Campagnolo. You can order them from England here in the U.S. and pay less than what retailers have to buy them for at wholesale. So this article starts out, SRAM claims victories in retail pricing. It comes from Steve Frothingham, who is the online editor of Bicycle Retailer. U.S. visitors to European-based e-commerce sites like Wiggle and Chain Reaction have seen something new when they searched for SRAM products in recent months. Nothing. The Chicago-based brand has developed policies that prevent those and some other offshore sites from selling into the U.S. market as part of an overall strategy to maintain consistent retail pricing worldwide and help brick-and-mortar retailers get better margins on aftermarket sales of SRAM products, including SRAM, Avid, RockShox, and Truvative-branded items. Wiggle and Chain Reaction continue to sell SRAM products to European web shoppers, generally at full retail prices. U.S.-based websites also continue to sell SRAM, but are required by SRAM's minimum advertised price or MAP policy to advertise full retail pricing. So we will see if Shimano tends to follow suit. Shimano is, of course, the largest producer of bicycle components in the industry, but maybe we'll see some changes. I think that would be probably a pretty good thing. I haven't had a favorite video of the week for a while, but this week one popped up that I just had to relate to you. It's from Bike Radar. It's actually a series of videos with a woman named Anna Glowinski. This week she's teaching you how to ride no-handed. Some of her previous videos are learn how to do a wheelie, learn how to do a track stand, and learn how to bunny hop in five simple steps. So actually, it's a 2-minute and 16-second video this week. And what she says is probably true. You can probably learn to ride no-handed just by watching this video and taking your bike out onto a nice smooth road. I haven't done it in a long, long time, but I really like the headline. Learn how to ride no-handed in five steps. Take off clothing, unwrap a sandwich, or show off your dance moves. She's really very good. She's also cute, and she wears a nice kit. So Anna Glowinski, Bike Radar, learn how to ride no-handed. It's 2 minutes and 16 seconds of fun. We all know it's been a rough political season here in the States, and there's been a lot of talk about sexism and how women are both spoken to and treated poorly. Evidently, the United States is not the only country experiencing this problem. CyclingNews.com reported this week on the suspension of Shane Sutton from the British Olympic track program after allegations of inappropriate and discriminatory language were proven to be true. After she was dropped from British Cycling's Olympic program, Varnish spoke out saying that Sutton had told her that she should, quote, move on and go and have a baby, end quote. Sutton was suspended by the organization 3 days later and subsequently resigned from his position as technical director. Following an internal investigation, the British Cycling Board has upheld an allegation made by Jess Varnish that former technical director Shane Sutton had used inappropriate and discriminatory language, the statement read. The board wishes to put on record its sincere regret that this happened. The findings of the investigation will help the development of the organization alongside the independent review into the culture of the world-class program jointly commissioned by British Cycling and UK Sport and led by Anna Marie Phelps. The falling out between Varnish and the British Cycling came to a head after Britain failed to qualify a women's sprint team for the Olympic Games in Rio. Varnish was extremely outspoken against the setup, saying that decisions had been made above their heads that impacted their qualification run. The following month, news broke that Varnish's contract with the organization had not been renewed just before the Games were due to take place. British Cycling said that that decision had been made on performance grounds, although Varnish claimed they had not let her see her data. Her comments were later backed up by former professionals Victoria Pendleton and Nicole Cook, who cited similar experiences. Others stood up for Sutton, including Laura Trott and Chris Boardman, who said that Sutton was the victim of a lynch mob. So he said, she said, we're back to that again. But evidently, Shane Sutton stepped down and that is probably not the end of what's going on with sexism in cycling. I want to move on to something a little nicer. And this week, Bicycling Magazine published the extended version of an interview editor Bill Strickland did with Richard Sachs on their online site, bicycling.com. The article was titled "The Universe's Most Enigmatic Frame Builder," and Bill's comments and questions for Richard were, to me, as interesting and eloquent as Richard's answers. Bill asked, though, in a much longer paragraph, quote, what's the most significant thing I'm leaving out of this summary of your life? In reply, Richard Sachs said, it occurred to me today while riding, and only since I haven't written for my site in over a week, I unplanned my life. Serendipity would be an overused word to describe the path I was on. I'm the accidental bicycle maker. I didn't want or plan to do any of this, but I became a bicycle maker once enough of the right mistakes were made. Bill then wrote, "It was sunny when we talked." And the interview goes on like that, Bill interjecting some really interesting commentary that makes it very prosaic and elegant. I'm looking forward to seeing Richard Sacks in Philly next weekend. And I don't know if Bill Strickland will be there, but if he is, I certainly will give him a big pat on the back for this one. Finally, you may or may not remember, if you've been listening to the show this long, that back in July 2012, I interviewed Craig Dodson. He is the director of the Richmond Cycling Corps. And this week, one of our listeners brought to my attention that Craig, who, as I remember, was about as self-effacing and humble as anyone I'd ever spoken with on the show, is one of CNN's 10 heroes. His Richmond Cycling Corps works with at-risk youth in the poorest of areas in Richmond, Virginia, and obviously the work has come to the attention of a much bigger audience than Craig might ever have imagined. You can read about Richmond Cycling Corps and his CNN story at richmondcyclingcorps.org. My next news item, which is my last for the week, is about what happens to riders who are not picked up by a team, which is kind of an interesting idea. You don't think about, everybody wants to know, well, who's going where and who's going, well, what about those riders who are not picked up? This is by a young man by the name of Adam Phelan, P-H-E-L-A-N. And the title of the article is "The Road Ahead, Adam Phelan on Stepping Away from Racing." It comes from cyclingtips.com. It was published October 27th. And it starts out, "While many professional riders have managed to secure a contract for the 2017 season, there are plenty out there still looking for a ride. For such riders, that search has only been made more difficult by the closure of several big teams. There just aren't as many spots out there as there are riders to fill them. With the Drapac Pro Continental team closing its doors at year's end, several current riders have been left without contracts, including Cycling Tips columnist Adam Phelan. As Adam writes, his search for a new team has proven challenging, and he's made the difficult decision to step away from racing. It begins, a heavy rain falls onto the roof as I lie in the darkness. It is 3 a.m. and I can't sleep. I just lie there, eyes wide open, staring out into the pitch black room. My girlfriend moves next to me, muttering gibberish under her breath as a dream takes hold of her. Stress pulls at my consciousness, and I look across at her with envy as she sleeps. A sense of unwavering nervousness spreads through me like poison. My mind is numb, yet in a strange way it is racing so fast it is hard for me to catch hold of a single thought. Thoughts, both positive and negative, flicker through me like a busy highway. Among all this noise, however, I know that one single thought, one sole reason keeps me awake. I can see it at the back of my mind. There it is, so clear, yet in so many ways it is also blurred and covered by fear. I say it to myself as I lie on the bed, my mind running the thought over and over again slowly, over and over like the ocean tide. This might be it. My days as a professional cyclist might be over." It goes on to explain his thinking and why his decision was to step away from the sport. It's kind of sad, but at least he gets to be realistic with himself, and he still has his job with Cycling Tips, which is kind of cool as a columnist. Obviously, he's a really good writer. I enjoyed reading the column. So again, it's cyclingtips.com. It was published on October 27th, and the title of the article is "The Road Ahead, Adam Phelan on Stepping Away from Racing." So we're going to step away from the news right now, and we're going to take a quick break. We will be right back to talk with Mike Wilson about cycling savvy. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of The Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit DoddCamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
Hey, we're back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and we are going to head over to the East Coast again. We're going to talk with Mike Wilson from Cycling Savvy. He and John Schubert gave a talk today, Saturday, at the Philly Bike Expo. That talk is being repeated tomorrow at 3 p.m. at the Philadelphia Convention Center. Cycling Savvy is a very interesting learn how to ride on the road course. So I'm anxious to catch up with Mike again. And let's say hello to Mike Wilson. Mike, thanks for joining me on the show this week.
Thanks. Glad to be here again.
Let's talk about Cycling Savvy. We haven't talked about it in a long time. That's what you and John are going to be talking about. Give us a little bit of background on Cycling Savvy for the listeners who don't know what it is.
All righty. Well, back in 2009, Kerry Caffrey and I started working on this program. We wanted to target people who wanted to ride their bikes just around town, people who don't necessarily see themselves as athletes and just want to ride around in their communities. And after a couple of years of development on that, we started teaching our first courses, and it picked up very quickly. We had a lot of interest from cycling instructors around the country. And some of them even came here to Orlando to take the course, and eventually we started spreading it around the country with trainings. And now we're in 17 states. We have instructors in 17 states.
Wow. Wow. I can remember when you guys first started out, and, you know, Kerry actually came to visit me up here in Cleveland, and we got to sit and talk about a lot of the program, and she's just this kind of brilliant graphics person, so the website's really exciting to peruse and learn from. How do you become a Cycling Savvy instructor? I know it's 17 states, but you have a lot more instructors than that.
We do. It's a bit of a challenge for us as an organization because we're still operating very much on a shoestring budget. American Bicycling Education Association is what started 2 years ago to really be the host, the caretaker of Cycling Savvy, as well as to develop some new programs that I'd like to talk about. And but so in order to get people through the training, there's some logistics of, you know, getting them through the basic course first and then figuring out whether they travel here to Orlando for training or if we can get enough people in a particular region who are instructor candidates that we can travel and do that training there.
How long does the training typically take? Is it a weekend or a week?
The final training itself is a weekend, but there's a lot of homework. We provide a lot of readings as well as some homework assignments that they have to do some problem solving. And those are actually ways of us for us to ensure that we've got people who are ready to commit to, you know, spending an entire weekend. And we want to make sure people are successful who are going to go through that program.
So one of the questions I think people will ask is, how is Cycling Savvy different from the League of American Bicyclists program?
Well, first off, is that it's entirely focused on how you ride in traffic. The league courses, the basic league courses, have been kind of a catch-all of everything. There's a little bit of mechanical stuff, you know, like how to change a flat tire, bike fit, what kind of clothing to wear. We don't do any of that sort of thing. It's entirely focused on how you handle your bike and what sort of strategies you use in traffic to keep yourself comfortable and safe.
I also noticed that on your website there are some online courses. How do they work?
Well, we're still wrapping those up. Kerry has about four more lectures to finish on that. What we recognized was because of the challenges of getting people certified as instructors, and then once they become instructors, getting people into in-person classes, there's just a lot of hurdles to get to that point. So while online may not be like the ideal method for delivering our content, it has the potential, obviously, to reach anybody, anytime. And also, in the format that we're providing, it's in nice little short manageable chunks of time. So you can watch a 5, 10, 15-minute video whenever you've got some time, and you'll be able to do it, you know, on your phone or wherever because it's a mobile platform as well. And so it just makes it a much more accessible course. Of course, we're only talking about the classroom portions of it, not the on-bike. Still haven't gotten the technology for that yet, but...
The virtual reality. Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Mike Wilson. He is with Cycling Savvy. He is giving a talk at the Philly Bike Expo along with our buddy John Schubert about Cycling Savvy both Saturday and Sunday. You'll miss it Saturday because this show airs after that. But Sunday you can get down to the Philly Bike Expo and the talk is at 3 p.m. I have a question about on-the-road cycling. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of there seem to be a lot of crashes. Of course, some of that has to do with a lot more riders and a lot more cars. Do you think that road cycling is growing? I know Cycling Savvy actually talks about being on the road with traffic, and that is part of it is I am traffic. But do you think that these new trends towards cycle tracks, things that keep you off the road, are going to be more interesting to people, or do you think that on-the-road cycling will grow and be better?
Well, you know, the thing is, first off, you have to remember that you're always in traffic. When you're on a sidewalk, you're in traffic because every driveway, every cross street, you have conflicts to deal with. In fact, that's where the majority of conflicts are, is at all those intersections and driveways. And so regardless of where you ride, whether it's in a regular travel lane, a bike lane, a barrier-separated facility of some sort, a sidewalk, you have to understand what are the factors that contribute to crashes and how to mitigate those. As for whether or not we're seeing increases or decreases or whatever, it seems to be rather flat to me. In fact, that's kind of borne out by data from the National Sporting Goods Association and their annual survey. It seems that adult cycling, just generally cycling, and they just define it as anyone who rides a bike six or more times a year, is fairly flat. But it's been declining for children, which is, you know, not good news for the long-term health of the sport or activity. What I'm seeing is perhaps not so much an increase, but a concentration. People who want to use a bike for transport or for a healthy lifestyle are moving to places where that's more convenient for them. So they're moving to city centers where distances are shorter, where there is more infrastructure, etc., and where it's more plausible to lead a car-free or car-light kind of lifestyle.
Well, that makes sense. We were just talking earlier in the program with the head of Bike Cleveland, Jacob Van Sickle, and we are about to launch our first separated bike way. We're going to see how that goes. And certainly I'm seeing more people on the road, but I'm also seeing a lot of road rage. It's very disconcerting. Are there any legislative efforts being made to sort of make cycling and driving more compatible? Are you seeing anything at the legislative level that is either making, you know, smacking the hands of drivers who are obnoxious and teaching cyclists to be better citizens on the road?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily a legislative remedy. I think what is required is for both parties to understand what's the best method of operation. And so that's where all the anxiety, where the anger comes from, is that motorists in particular are receiving all kinds of mixed messages. They hear from some cyclists that, oh, I don't want to be on the road. I want to be separated. And then from other cyclists, they see them out there in the middle of the lane. And our bias, our general cultural bias, is that, well, that cyclist who's out there riding in mixed traffic, well, he must be an idiot. When in fact, if you look at the data, these are the cyclists who are actually the best off and the safest. So this messaging that's always going out about bicycling in traffic is dangerous feeds into the road rage, because the motorist sees the cyclist in the road, says, well, not only is this guy an idiot because he's riding in the road, he's also in my way. So this is perfect rationale for me to do a little bit of harassment. Whereas if the rationale was, oh, he's using the safest means possible of getting to his destination, oh, and he's also in my way, it's kind of harder to justify harassment in that situation.
Well, how do you get to that point for the driver to say he's in the best place possible on the road? I mean, there's a gap in the education somewhere where a driver doesn't see it yet.
Absolutely. Yeah, and both the cyclist and the motorist need to understand this. What's interesting is that when I do presentations to motorists, I actually get less pushback in many cases on the idea of cyclists controlling the lane because they're not really necessarily invested in it one way or the other, so they can kind of look at it more rationally and say, oh, okay, those things make sense.
Interesting.
The cyclist is driving defensively, and here's the type of things he's trying to defend against.
Whereas the cyclist is going, I'm going to take this lane and not even see the rationale of the driver at that point. That's interesting. It never occurred to me, but it certainly makes sense that, that drivers would understand it. So what are you and John going to be telling the audiences at Philly Bike Expo this weekend?
Well, we'll give them a bit of an overview of the course. We'll show some sample videos from the online course, talk a little bit about our organization, American Bicycling Education Association. Talk about one of our next programs, which will be a course oriented to club and racer cyclists. People who ride faster and or in groups have a different set of needs when it comes to riding in traffic and a different perspective, you know, that they bring to things and different challenges that they see. So that's something that we're working on. One of our instructors in Southern California is doing a lot of great work on that. And I think we'll definitely also talk about how getting more cyclists into programs like Cycling Savvy, we think, will actually result in growing the sport. Because when people are confident, they ride more. And that's good not only for the sport, but it's good for the business as well.
Well, that's a really good place to end this. Ride more. Get out there and ride more. Well, it's really good to talk to you. I can't wait to see you. We've never actually met in person, and we will be doing that this coming weekend at the Philly Bike Expo. Cycling Savvy, give us the website, please.
CyclingSavvy.org.
Very simple. Okay, Mike Wilson, what do they call you? Do you have, like, a title?
Well, with American Bicycling Education Association, I'm the volunteer executive director. I also work as the bicycle and pedestrian planner for Metroplan Orlando, which is a transportation planning agency for our area.
That's the one that actually pays the bills.
Right.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for talking with me. I do look forward to meeting you and talking with you and sitting in on the Cycling Savvy talk on Sunday. Have a great afternoon. Have a good trip up there, and I'll see you in Philadelphia.
Same to you, Diane.
Take care. Bye-bye. Mike Wilson is in Orlando. I thought he was already on the East Coast. He will be flying up to Philadelphia, and we will be seeing him at the Philly Bike Expo, cyclingsavvy.org. Interesting organization, a different perspective from the League of American Bicyclists instructor program. Carrie Caffrey and I are good friends, and I've been watching what they're doing. I think they're doing some really interesting work. That's our show for this week. But I need to quickly correct what I said about Mike Wilson to you, our listeners, about not being able to hear Mike and John Schubert give their Cycling Savvy talk at Philly Bike Expo. That's next weekend, November 5th and 6th. So I apologize for the confusion, which is all mine, as usual. Thank you so much for joining me. And I'd like to thank all of our guests, Jacob Van Sickle, who is the director of Bike Cleveland, Ewan Wilson from High Adventures, and Mike Wilson from Cycling Savvy. We will be in Philadelphia next week. If you're out there at the Bike Expo, come and say hi. We're at table 4. And I hope you have a great week and can go for a ride. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next week at this same time with more conversation and news from the world of cycling. If you missed any part of today's show, download the podcast from iTunes or WJCU.org. And you can follow The Outspoken Cyclist on Facebook and Twitter to keep the conversation going throughout the week. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.